Welcome to the Project Sleep Podcast. For those of you who've listened before, you might be expecting to hear from Julie Flygar, Project Sleep's founder and CEO. But for this special series of podcasts on sleep apnea topics, I'll be your host. I'm Emma Cooksey, the Sleep Apnea Program Manager here at Project Sleep, and I'm so glad you're here. Project Sleep is a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to raising awareness and advocating for sleep health, sleep equity, and sleep disorders. We created the Sleep Apnea Squad series to allow listeners to dive deeper into specific topics relevant to living with sleep apnea. For more on today's topic, please check out our corresponding toolkit, which is available for free on our website to download, print, and share. The link to the toolkit and other Sleep Apnea Squad topics is in the show notes, or you can find the Sleep Apnea Squad page at project-sleep.com. On this podcast, all guests express their own opinions. While medical diagnoses and treatment options are discussed for educational purposes, this information should not be taken as medical advice. Each person's experience is so unique, which is why it's so important to consult your own medical team while making decisions about your own health. If you haven't done so yet, please hit the subscribe button so you never miss a Project Sleep podcast episode. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please leave us a rating or a review wherever you listen so that we can reach more listeners and raise more awareness. So without further ado, here's today's Sleep Apnea Squad episode.
Welcome. Today we're going to be talking about sleep apnea testing. So if you tuned into our first Sleep Apnea Squad, we were talking all about, could I have sleep apnea? We were doing all about the signs and symptoms of sleep apnea. So this session follows on really neatly from that because we're going to be talking all about the sleep apnea testing options there are. So to begin with, let's just go around and maybe like introduce ourselves real quick.
Sure. Yeah. My name is Andrea Ramberg. I have a sleep background. So I've been a sleep clinician for about 17 years, registered polysomnographic technologist, sleep coach, all that passion for taking care of patients. And then I'll hand it over to Jody.
My name is Jody Martin. I have been dealing with sleep apnea since 99, but have been being successfully treated for the past 3 years and it's changed my life.
Right on. So I'm going to just do some introductions here for our two guests. So Jody Martin is a husband, a Marine Corps veteran, and a business owner. He lives in Texas with his wife of 30 years, Rachel. Jody initially underwent testing in a sleep clinic and received a diagnosis of severe obstructive sleep apnea in 2019. After a difficult start to CPAP therapy, Jody abandoned it. When he tried to get help, he was told he would have to go through the entire process, starting with a referral from his primary care doctor. That was a process he was unwilling to go through again, and that was until he discovered Lofta and was able to go through testing, diagnosis, and getting set up on CPAP therapy entirely from home and with the support of Lofta staff. Jody is passionate about sharing his journey to encourage other people living with undiagnosed sleep apnea to learn about their testing options and get the testing, diagnosis, and treatment they need. And Jody ended his bio with a quote. And honestly, like everything Jody does just always makes me cry. But he said, "This treatment has changed my life. It has given me back a relationship with the love of my life that we both thought was gone forever," which is so nice. So Andrea Ramberg has spent 16 years in sleep medicine, learning every component of polysomnography, from clinical to administrative. She is double credentialed with her RPSGT and CCSH and holds a Master of Science in Industrial and Organizational Psychology. Andrea is EnsoData's clinical director, and she joined the team in 2020 because of her passion for bringing sleep medicine into the future. From 2021 to 2023, Andrea served as president of the Board of Registered Polysomnographic Technologists. And her goal is to empower sleep technologists in new roles through the CCSH credential as sleep coaches, sleep educators, and sleep navigators. So thank you both so much for being here. Okay, so I'm going to just do a really quick overview here of some of the themes that are going to come up in our discussion today. So first of all, I think we're going to be talking a bunch about testing at home versus testing in a lab. So that's probably going to be a lot of what we're talking about. And then I think also important to that is how you're paying for sleep apnea testing. So whether that's through insurance coverage or whether you're having to pay out of pocket. So we're going to kind of talk about like the pros and cons of each. And then lastly, something that comes up a lot, I feel like, in Project Sleep's work is just advocating for yourself in medical settings. So whether it's getting tested in the first place or the referral you need for testing or requesting further testing, there can sometimes be a need to advocate for yourself. So we'll probably touch on that too. So before we get to Jody sharing his story of his first full experience of polysomnogram testing, I thought we could start maybe with Andrea and just have you start with what the PSG test is and just kind of like a little bit about like what the sensors do, the reason someone might have one of those tests and what kind of things it can pick up and that kind of stuff. I thought that would be really helpful.
Yeah, thanks, Emma. So there are different testing that, so if your physician thinks, hey, suspected sleep apnea, but there's also other sleep disorders. There's numerous. We do lots of things when we sleep. So that physician might order what we call an in-lab PSG. And what that is you come into the lab, you sleep overnight in your own bedroom, right? They kind of make it feel like a hotel, but they are hooking up wires to you to be able to see whether you're sleeping or awake. And there's a bunch of EEG leads that they set on there. And that's going to tell us what stages of sleep you're getting into. Are you hitting your REM cycles? Are you going in and out of your sleep cycles, 90 to 110 minute, you know, fluctuations? There's a lot that we could tell about an individual of how they're sleeping with that. And then there's also, we put leads for like muscle. So any tension, any like grinding of your teeth, there's leads on your legs. Are you kicking your legs? Like restless legs can translate into not being able to get very good sleep at night because you're moving around a lot, which is miserable. And then we also put on an airflow monitor because that's going to tell us, hey, how are you breathing? And are you stopping breathing? Is there any gaps in your getting that oxygen within your body? And then there's also two belts, because as you can imagine, if your body does not get that oxygen, if your body's not getting that breath of air, it has this mechanism to keep you alive. It's a survival thing. So your body is going to really try to get you to breathe again and to wake you up. So those chest belts help us see that. And it also can help us detect different types of apnea as well. But so from that, then there's also the HSATs, but I'm not quite sure we're quite in there yet.
So yeah, that's good for now, because I think we're going to have Jody just kind of go through his experience of that test. So Jody, if you could just share with everybody a little bit about what your life was like before you even went to a doctor or got tested. What were the symptoms that you were dealing with, and how was that affecting your life in terms of work and also in family life? Could you maybe just set the scene for us?
So I've got the perfect story for that, actually. In 2008, we traveled. I was changing jobs. The economy had just tanked, and I was leaving South Carolina. We were coming to Arkansas, and I had to travel to Arkansas to have an interview. And so, of course, my wife and two daughters went with me. Money was tight because changing jobs. So we get a hotel room so I can get a few hours sleep before I go to this interview. And the kids pile in bed with her. We get a room with two beds, and I'm in the other bed and I'm sleeping. And all of a sudden, this violent strike to my forehead awakens me as I, shoot straight up in the bed, and I see three heads in the other bed start pretending like they were asleep. Because my wife had taken a Coke bottle. She was just going to toss it over and kind of hit me and kind of wake me up because I was snoring so loud. But her aim was truer than she thought it would be, and it hit me right in the forehead. And that's the way it had gotten to. It had gotten to where I snored so loud and so hard that if we went anywhere I had to have a separate room because no one could sleep. We went on a vacation and got a cabin at the lake, and it had a bed on the covered front porch. Guess who got to sleep on the covered front porch? And, you know, and it had gotten to the point where we didn't sleep in the same room anymore at the house. One of us was always on the couch. And I would always tell her, she'd wake me up, you know, "You're snoring, I can't sleep." I'm like, "Well, I'm not trying to. You know, if I could control it, I would, you know." And finally, she's like, "We've got to do something. You know, you're stopping sleep. You're stopping breathing in your sleep. You're gasping for air." And I had heard of sleep apnea, but, you know, I really didn't. You know, this was 2012, 14, somewhere around there. You know, I'd heard of it, but I didn't really know what it was. I just thought it meant you snored a lot. And so finally, I said, "Okay, I'm going to do something about this." And, you know, I'm a Marine Corps veteran. I was raised on a farm. I'm a foster kid. I was raised by foster parents on a farm. You know, I've been pretty self-reliant since a young age, and asking for help is not one of my big traits. So finally, I went to my family doctor, who's a friend, which is not always a good thing. You know, sometimes doctors that are friends don't have as much perspective as someone that's a complete stranger, you know. And he's like, "You sure you're not just snoring? You know, maybe you need to lose a few pounds." I'm like, "No, it's beyond that." And so I finally got him to give me a referral. So in the little town we lived in, I had to go to it's called Arkansas Medical. And I went over there, and they have a whole sleep study place, but they don't do the sleep studies. They have you fill out a bunch of paperwork, and then they take a couple blood samples, and then you basically talk about taking naps and stuff with them, and then they decide, okay, you do need a sleep study. And so then it was go ahead and make an appointment for the sleep study and go to the hospital one night, and then they wrap me up in the wires and, you know, put me in a nice sterile ice cold room, and I laid on the hard bed with a SpongeBob pillow, and they said, "Sleep." And I said, "Okay." You bet. But I was able to go to sleep, and, you know, the guy told me, I mean, he was real nice. He said, "Look, I'm going to watch you sleep. We're going to see how everything works. And then, you know, about 2 or 3, I'm going to come wake you up, and we'll put you on a CPAP and see if we can get some levels adjusted." So I fell asleep roughly 10 o'clock. Okay. This little guy is shaking me violently, and I wake up, and I'm like, "Huh?" And he's like, "We've got to get you on a CPAP now." And I'm like, "Wow, I must have really slept hard, because, you know, it seemed like it hadn't been 15, 20 minutes. I said, "It's 3 o'clock already." He goes, no, it's 10:30. He said, "But I was scared to watch you sleep anymore. I'm scared you're going to die." And so they ended up putting me on a BiPAP and basically just cranked it up all the way. And so I had to go back to the Arkansas Medical place to lease my BiPAP and have it set up. And they did. And they supposedly set it up to the way he prescribed it. I took it home, I started to use it, and it was unusable. It was blowing so hard that, one, it took forever to try to get to sleep, to try to get used to it. But as soon as I went to sleep, it would blow my airway. If I ever swallowed once in my sleep, it would blow my airway up and it would completely fill my stomach full of air. You know, and you wake up and you're belching, and you got heartburn, and so I called them back, and I called the people I got the CPAP from, and I said, "Look, I just need you to turn this down just a hair, just a little bit." And so that's when I was informed.
Sorry to interrupt you, Jody, but I just want to double, triple check that I've got it right. So you went to your primary care physician. Mm-hmm. They sent you to the sleep clinic or somewhere that mm-hmm. then referred you for the sleep test in the hospital.
Right.
Then now you're talking about a company, like a durable medical equipment company, call it. Who actually supplied the CPAP to them that you're calling back to ask for help.
Right. Because they're the one that set the CPAP up.
Yeah.
And I was like, "If you could just turn it down just a little bit so that it doesn't fill my stomach up, I think I can try to get to use this thing."
Are you facing sleep issues or a sleep disorder? Project Sleep is now excited to have the Sleep Helpline, a nonprofit-led free national helpline providing personalized support and resources. You can reach out today to speak with a compassionate resource specialist who will listen and help provide accurate sleep disorders information, resources to help navigate daily living and the healthcare landscape, and connect you with a certified sleep center and patient support organizations. Contact the Sleep Helpline at 1-800 819-2043 or by filling out a form on our website at project-sleep.com.
A lot of patients, myself included, have a situation where if they struggle, I've been on CPAP successfully for 16 years now, but certainly my first month was really difficult. And so for me, I find that I was kind of going round in the circle where I would ask the durable medical equipment company who set up the CPAP for help, and they would send me to my doctor, and my doctor would send me back to the durable medical equipment company. So I think a lot of patients do find themselves struggling with that kind of, you know, thing going on.
So the tech that took care of you, that would have been someone like me, right? That's with you overnight. And we would see these patients over and over. And a lot of them, you knew something was wrong, right? Like you knew, hey, this is not normal that I can't sleep next to my wife, that, and I, you know, you're maybe having all these other feelings. So you go to seek out treatment. You talk to your doctor, you get the sleep test, but it's still really powerful for individuals to understand just how severe they are. To your point, they woke you up and put a mask on. That doesn't happen to everybody. You know, some people don't have sleep apnea, right? Or some people aren't as severe and they have to come back for another one. So what that CPAP mask was doing is your airway was collapsing so frequently and so often, causing those oxygen desaturations, that you needed that. I've seen patients stop breathing up to 2 minutes. And I always do a test of like, could you do that sitting here? No. So it's amazing the stress that you're putting at your body over and over. And it sounds like then they switched you to a different mode of treatment. So there's different modes, you know, with all that. And bi-level is, you know, synonymous with, it can be harder to tolerate. For some individuals, it's easier, some harder. That goes up higher. So patients get stuck in this care plan, get primary care. No, that's the durable medical equipment. No, you got to go back to the primary care. Because the primary care and that physician is the one that's ordering it. The one that's saying, yep, I want you at this certain setting with that. And that's why the durable medical equipment can't touch it, because they need that physician order. Well, unfortunately, that physician, especially a primary care, isn't as well versed in sleep medicine. There's a shortage of sleep medicine physicians everywhere. So they don't understand some of those components. So you heard Emma say at the beginning on the concept of like a sleep coach, that I'm important. That's technologists and clinicians that actually can follow that patient with it. So to help them, you know, a doctor's time, they're strapped, they're whatever. So allow, you know, certain clinicians to help you out with that journey and to troubleshoot some of that stuff. We're actually seeing a lot more success with keeping patients compliant with that. So I would suggest anybody in the audience that might be having some trouble, there's help out there. There's a lot of tips and tricks that a clinician can help you with that maybe, you know, you weren't aware of. Breaks my heart. You know, it's okay because it has a really to help patients. And
yeah, so it's okay because it has a really good ending. We're only partway through. So Jody, one of the things I didn't cover with you, what if you could just share with everybody, this first time that you had the full like overnight study in the hospital, this was covered by your insurance, right? I got a nod before we went. So yeah, so that was all I wanted to do was kind of contrast my experience with I've only had one full PSG test overnight. And I think that my experience was probably better than Jody's, largely because I, you know, at this point had already been on CPAP for so long. And when I went in for my test, the reason was a bit different. So I'd already had the diagnosis with a home test. And so the reason I went for a full in-lab study was I was trying to have my pressure titrated. So we talked a little bit about that with Jody, where they put a CPAP on him or a BiPAP on him and they were trying to get the pressure correct. So anyway, so when I went in, they were doing this titrating study, and that's really something that can only be done, like that can't be done with a home test. So I kind of knew why I was there and was prepared for what it was going to be like. And so I had a fairly good experience. Like I had a really great sleep tech that was helping me. And I think if you know what you're expecting, it can be a little bit better maybe. And the other thing I thought I would mention is, I don't think many people, I didn't know this, but I actually paid for my full polysomnogram out of pocket. Like I always thought that you must pay with insurance, but I did an interview with Dr. Sahil Chopra from Empower Sleep, and he said, well, the problem I was having was having a high deductible. And so me and my husband, being self-employed, we had a very high deductible kind of catastrophic plan. And when my sleep specialist sent the order for the sleep study to have this titration done, I was quoted $2,300 and I hadn't met my deductible, and that seemed like a lot. And so Dr. Chopra had told me, call them up and say, I would like to pay in cash. And so that's what I ended up doing. So I think, you know, just to kind of let people know that that is actually an option, because I don't think most people know. But yeah, so my experience was probably a little bit better than Jody's. And I think a lot depends on kind of what you know ahead of time. So yeah, I wanted to go back and maybe have you, Andrea, explain the other testing options. So we're going to talk a little bit about home testing now. So we've talked a little bit about in-lab testing. So I'm going to have you explain it because you're an expert and I'm not. But my understanding was always that home pulse oximetry testing didn't used to ever be diagnostic. But I think with some new technologies that the PPG, I think it is, Enzo Data and Sleep Image are also doing a similar thing where they're able to do a diagnosis with level 4 test too. So maybe just give us an overview of like what makes something a level 3 or a level 4 test.
Yeah, definitely. And it, you know, a quick segue into this, it's, you know, I feel like us in the community, we hear about obstructive sleep apnea all the time, right? Like everybody's got, or somebody knows somebody with a CPAP and all of that. But the truth of the matter is 80% of the population is seen as undiagnosed with sleep apnea, which blows my mind, a lot of it, because we've heard from Jody, we've heard, you know, from Emma, and, you know, there's just a lot of stuff, that quality of life stuff that comes with having untreated sleep apnea. So part of what we're doing in the sleep field is increasing access to care. And that's where some of these home sleep study, you know, units came in, because not everybody can go into a lab. We have rural areas where they're hours and hours away from a lab to get that treatment. This expands a lot of access to care. So that difference between that in-lab study is it's actually a unit in the level 3. There's, you would go into the lab in some cases, and they would educate you, show you how to use it. But it's basically just a airflow, a thermistor that you put on, a pulse ox, and then a belt that you wear with like the module thing. And you take it home and you sleep with it in your own bed, which can actually help. There's this something called the first night effect where the in-lab is obviously not your usual thing, but you're still wearing stuff, right? So it still could be a little bit hard. And the difference too is there's no EEG with that, with the sleep, but there's different parameters, and I'll go into that with the PPG, that we could detect whether you're sleeping or awake. And then there's that level 4, and that's that pulse oximeter. And it's funny, I think a lot of people are seeing that's new technology. And what I found, and you know, the more that I did my research, pulse oximetry actually has been around since like the 1970s. It's the stuff that you wear, it's the same kind of concept that you wear in the hospital. So if you go to a doctor's office, they check your SpO2 levels, you go into a hospital. So there's certain technology within there, and without seeing your eyes glaze over, because this is, but basically it's testing the different blood volume in your fingertip and how your heart pumps your body to the blood, to the different parts of the body. That can tell us a lot more than what we ever thought possible. So to that point, those level 4 HSTs are a lot smaller. So it is like rings that you wear, just a simple watch. So instead of that annoying thing that's sticking up your nose, it's something that can be very, very easy. And, you know, again, some people, individuals choose to get it shipped to their home. You know, you're doing your consult with your physician, maybe through telehealth, they ship it to your home. A lot of these units, the best part about these new units coming out is you could do it multi-night. So instead of just using it one night, the multi-night can show us the variability. There's a lot of new research coming out that we vary night to night with how we present with our sleep, depending on a bunch of outcomes, right? Or a bunch of factors. So doing a multi-night sleep study is really important too, just to see how you vary. This new study came out that I want to say like 50% change severity of OSA from night to night, which is kind of crazy. And then there's also one important thing to note is if you do get an HSAT and it comes back negative, It isn't, that doesn't mean you don't have sleep apnea. It means
so this is what we want to spend so much time on, because the number of people I've talked to where they have significant symptoms and they go and they go through whatever channels to get this home test, and they're just told like it was, you know, it didn't show that you had sleep apnea. And instead of, I think oftentimes, you know, people have symptoms, there's a reason they went in the first place, right? And there's so many different sleep disorders that can cause a lot of those like daytime sleepiness symptoms. So if you didn't get a positive sleep apnea test from a home test, it's really important to go back to the doctor and advocate for yourself for more testing.
People, listen, I've been there. Please, when you go to your hometown doctor and you tell him you have sleep apnea, and he says, no, you snore too much and you have allergies, you say, no, that's not it. Because there's not, I don't believe there's not enough small town physicians educated enough in sleep apnea to be able to tell you whether you should have a sleep apnea test or not. And I'm not trying to hurt anybody's feelings or down anybody. The education level as far as sleep apnea has not been there for smaller hometown physicians. And they think, man, I've been stuck on allergy pills. I've been given the little nasal thing where you got to wash your nose out, you know, and that's not, it doesn't work.
Right.
You know, and the worst thing in the world, and I know there's some people out there that feel this, is knowing there's something wrong, finally getting up the courage to ask for help, and then to be told, well, you're just insane. There's nothing wrong.
Yeah. It's the worst feeling, because you start thinking like it must be me. Like I remember being told, I went undiagnosed for about 10 years. And I remember being told there's nothing medically wrong with you because they did a bunch of blood testing. And those words really, you know, made me kind of feel, well, if there's nothing medically wrong with me, there must be something mentally wrong with me, right? Or like, you know, it's my fault in some way. So yeah, it can be a real challenge. And I don't think it's just small town doctors that you're talking about. It's honestly like primary care physicians don't receive enough training in sleep, like across the country. It's just a really big problem. So Jody, I think we've gotten as far as you were describing your aerophagia, like of swallowing a lot of air and having a tough time with that. And so you really struggled with CPAP. So do you want to pick up your story so that we can kind of get the next part of it?
So what had happened when I went back and they told me that I had to go see my primary care physician and do it all over again? No, I'm out. I mean, it was a 6-month process to begin with. Start to finish, it was almost 6 months door to door. And I'm like, I'm not doing this all over again. I'm not going through, you know, I was like, you know, I spent a bunch of money. I wasted a bunch of time, took a lot of time off work to get this done. I said, you know, it's not in the cards. And so I just threw the CPAP in the bag, threw it in the corner, or actually it's a BiPAP, but, you know, and just actually started fixing up our guest room as my bedroom and started to decorate a little. And me and my wife have been married 30 years. I told her the day I met her, I was going to marry. I don't care how much love you got. When you live like roommates, you start kind of treating each other like roommates. And it was one of those things that it just steadily progressed. And then I got to the point where I knew how bad it was getting, because I would wake up in the middle of the night gasping in there by myself. And I'd be like, oh, I must need some water, or I had the hiccups, or no, but I knew what it was. It got to the point in my life where honestly, when I stopped, I wouldn't take NyQuil. I wouldn't take any kind of cold medicine. I sure wouldn't take like an Advil PM or anything like that. No Benadryl, anything that would make me drowsy, because I figured that I probably wouldn't wake up. And I had stopped planning vacations, planning on going anywhere, because I knew at any given night, there was about a 50-50 chance when I lay down and went to sleep that I wasn't gonna wake up. And I found out this later, and this kills me, breaks my heart, but my wife and my daughters would be, when I was taking one of my many naps during the day, if I stopped snoring, if somehow I hit the right spot where I didn't snore, they would literally draw straws on who was going to come check on me, because did none of them want to walk in there and find me dead in the bed. And I mean, and that was my life for 3 years. You know, and living like that is a miserable, it makes you a mean, nasty, uninhabitable person that no one wants to be around. I've apologized to everybody profusely, but it's still, there were still times where I was short and grumpy and yelled at people. And it's kind of like the old saying goes, you know, if you don't heal old wounds, you'll bleed on people that didn't cut you. And that's what was happening. You know, they were there, they were close. I was frustrated, and there was no one that I could take it out on.
Thank you so much for sharing all of this with us. It's really helpful. I can't tell you how helpful it is for people. There's so many people that can relate to how you were feeling. So I just really appreciate you sharing your story today. So at that point, when was it that you became aware of this online testing option?
My wife found Lofta on Facebook.
Oh.
And I was like, yeah, okay. You know, the phone's been listening to us talk about it. So, you know, it's going to throw up some ads here. And I said, all right, I'll send them a message. You know, and I got in touch with them. And they sent me a thing back and set up a phone call. And I had a phone call with someone. And I was like, okay, they know something about sleep disorders because they asked me the right questions. And so for $148, they sent me a watch and a little iWatch with no numbers on it. And
so I thought, it has a sensor for your finger, yeah, and one that kind of is worn like a watch, yeah, and then one that goes right here.
That's exactly what it was. So I get this and I'm remembering the test I took at the hospital and I'm thinking, oh man, this is laughable. You know, there's no way this is going to work. So I Bluetooth it to my phone.
You didn't think that the little test was going to...
No, I was like, this is a ripoff. They're ripping me off. And then I started thinking about it. I'm like, well, I mean, they're only going to make $148 and this equipment's probably worth that. So I don't see what they're going to get out of it. But anyway, so I Bluetooth it to the phone. I did my thing. And then you get a message the next morning through the app and it says, you know, it's been sent in and it's being processed and you'll get a phone call within 24 hours. About, I don't know, 8 hours in, I get a phone call from them. They were really wanting to speak with me. And then I got on there with one of their sleep coaches and they start going over the results. And I could tell by his tone of voice that he was concerned because he kept stopping the call. And he's like, let me check with somebody on something real quick. And it said the first test, I had 82 instances a minute. And he's like, every other breath, an hour, I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, you know, every other breath, you stop breathing. And I'm like, okay. And he said, you know, and he said, there's some extended periods of time where your pulse ox is dropping below 75. And he said, that's very bad. You know, and I was like, okay. Next question was, do you smoke? And I was like, yes, I do. And he said, no, you can't. He said, with this, you're really rolling the dice here. He said, you're already low on your pulse ox. Your pulse ox is going to be lower all the time because you smoke. And now with this on top of it, you're not going to be able to do it. I put them down that day, hadn't smoked since. Because I started looking at things different. And they said, okay, we're going to get you some equipment. And I ended up buying the same exact machine from them. And I went back over the results. I got to the hospital and the results they gave me were almost identical. I mean, I didn't really know what the numbers meant, but I knew the numbers were the same. And, you know, I could go line by line and see that everything was just about the same. And so I said, okay, well, maybe this is real. They sent me the machine and I got the machine and I put it on and I went to sleep the first night and man, woke up with a belly full of air and was just heartbroken. And so I get a call about 2 days later from my sleep coach from Lofta. And she asked me something that no one had asked me through this whole process. She said, how do you feel? How do you feel about the whole everything? And my wife hadn't even asked me that because I don't think she wanted to know the answer. And when she asked me that, that poor woman on the other end of the phone got a 35-minute earful of everything. You know, and when I was done, she said, do you feel better? And I said, actually, I do. I feel a lot better. And she said, now.
Sharing with somebody.
She said, now forget all about that. We're going to fix all of this. She said, first of all, I'm going to teach you how to turn your machine down. We're going to adjust it down a little bit so you can get some sleep. We're going to get you a couple of good night's sleep. We're going to monitor it and make sure it's working. And then if we need to turn it up, we will. But let's get you some sleep. And that night was the first night I slept in the bed with my wife all night long in probably 15 years. Wow. And it was, to wake up and the sun was coming up and be able to see her face in bed with me, it was a moment that changed everything. It really did. I'm sorry. I don't mean to get emotional.
It's totally okay.
When it happens like that for people.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd give up completely. I was ready to go. Man, I had lists. I had safe codes. I had everything wrote down. My youngest daughter knew where everything was. Just she's my buddy, and I was ready to go.
So I think this is just so perfectly illustrates exactly what Andrew was talking about with having, sleep techs there able to support and just talk you through it, right? It makes a world of difference.
Yeah.
The machine will never work if you don't have a sleep coach. Yeah. If you do not have someone to talk to at least once a week, especially when you first start out, at least once a week, and say, hey, this ain't right, or I think this is wrong, or because people are so quick to give up on things mm-hmm. that are kind of a pain in the butt anyway, after I got my first couple nights sleep, I got two big zits right here on my nose, and it hurts so bad. And she's like, oh, well, your nasal pads are the wrong size. We just need to get you different ones.
Yeah.
Bam. 24 hours later.
Fixed it.
I got nasal pads. And she said, I want you to get you some Vaseline. She said, they even sell coconut scented. And just rub a little bit on there. And, I would never have thought to do that.
Yeah, there's a lot of little tips and tricks. So, like, I work closely with a sleep coach. I have been a sleep coach myself. Mm-hmm. I worked in the durable medical equipment realm. But I work closely, and something that we do in the current organization that I'm working with artificial intelligence, is they're better able to predict some of that stuff, some of those issues. But what I tell technologists and patients too, is you can never take out that human interaction component with it. So as we see technology shift, right? Okay, maybe not as many people are going in lab and it's HST. And I'm working with these clinicians that are like, what is that? Where does that leave me? I was like, right where you need to be to talk to these patients, to be their sleep coach, to guide them. There's so many little tips and tricks that the physician isn't even, aware of, right? We're the ones at night. We're the ones that are in the lab troubleshooting with everybody. We know a lot of these little tips and tricks to help. And that just warms my heart even more that you had a sleep coach that made you, I'm going to cry now, Jody. Wow. But
I knew when I invited Jody on, I was just like, everyone's going to be crying, but that's good.
There's such a big role, and that warms my heart. And I want everybody to know out there, with if they're struggling, reach out, because it really, like, it's the littlest of things that can make a really big difference.
Yeah.
And sleep coaches really care. You know, we're in this sleep field for a reason. We want to see you be a success. We want to see you be back in bed with your wife. You want to see you live a full life and see your grandkids. And there's a lot of stuff that we're invested in with that, and seek help.
Well, other thing of it, she was the first one that ever asked me how I felt, yeah. Not about how I was sleeping at night or anything, but how I felt about the whole process,
mm-hmm.
And she, I talked to her every week for a year, and then we went to every 2 weeks and stuff, because everything got lined out within the first 6 weeks. Everything was lined out, but there was times she'd call me and she's like, hey, have you been using your machine? Well, yeah, of course I have. Well, something's not right. Well, why? Because you're grumpy. How many hours are you sleeping a night? And she would, she kept me honest, and she would go over my results, because they get it through the cellular data, and she could see the results. And, so I can't lie to her, and so it was, especially guys will tell you 100%. Oh yeah, I'm using it. and they won't use it.
Oh, no, they don't. And so my last question for you, Jody, is what would your message be to anyone watching this who's in denial or is procrastinating about getting sleep apnea testing?
Okay. I do have a message for people that especially are in denial. Snoring is never just snoring unless you're sick. It's something. If it is consistent and enough that people wake you up or you have to go to a different room to sleep, there's something wrong. You need to see someone, because you're going to keep denying it and you're going to wake up dead. If there's anybody in your life that you love or anybody in your life that loves you, go get some help. it will change your life. Yeah, I look like Darth Vader when I sleep. Yeah, it's a pain in my ass. But you know what? I'm here every day. I walk my daughter down the aisle that Saturday.
Yeah.
You know.
So my experience with home testing was a little bit different from Jody. So I just kind of wanted to share that a little bit so that people can kind of see the different ways that people can get home testing. So in my experience, I think Andrea had touched on it, that oftentimes the sleep specialist will do an at-home test as a sort of first step. Probably not with every, maybe you can maybe speak to us about like which patients get that and which don't. But for me, I just wanted to explain that there, you know, I used insurance and I went to my primary care physician, got a referral to a sleep specialist. And then the first thing they did was order a home sleep test. So I picked up the sleep test from the sleep specialist's office, did it at home, dropped it back, and that was all covered under my insurance. There's the way that Jody did it, and Loftit is not the only company. We're a nonprofit and we don't recommend one company over another. There are so many options out there, but Loftit is the company that Jody was using. So he worked with them through telehealth, got his home test sent to him, and then his diagnosis through telehealth. And then as he explained, he got his CPAP sent directly to him at home and got ongoing support that way. But certainly, it's not the only way to do it, I think, is what I was going to explain. Oftentimes, people think, well, if they've had a home sleep test and it hasn't shown sleep apnea, there must be no sleep disorder. But it could be that they have a different sleep disorder, or it could be that they do have obstructive sleep apnea, but it's just not being picked up. So is that something that you saw in you know, clinical settings?
Yeah, absolutely. And I had alluded to this research, but something that shocked me even clinically was that 10% of individuals that on their first night weren't like diagnosed with OSA from the multi-night variability. So it's so important to have like that follow-up with it. Something else that we're seeing is that women often are very underdiagnosed, because they have a lot more what we call upper respiratory. So they're not the dramatic choking and gasping, and some do, right? Like some have that. But women are much more subtle with theirs. They have just like a slight airway closure, but it's enough to wake them up. You know, they still get oxygen desaturations. And something to that, once women hit menopause, they become just as likely to have severe apnea as men do. Men are much more likely, right, at a younger age. But once women hit menopause, there are hormones with for different reasons that fluctuate, and women aren't talked about. Like every OBGYN should be screening their patients, and they don't, because women are very underdiagnosed. So with this, if you have a negative, it's never meant to disc like, okay, yep, you don't have sleep apnea. I would 100% fight for that in lab, especially with women with the upper respiratory, that in lab can detect that a lot better than what these home units can, at least for now, right? We're making a lot of technological advances, but it is so important to fight and advocate for yourself. There's other sleep disorders. I mean, I think OSA gets the limelight, but there's a lot of other stuff happening in our sleep, like REM behavior disorder, you know, sleep disorder. There's a central sleep apnea where it's actually not your airway closing, it's your brain telling you not to breathe, which is scary. There's a lot of stuff that we do with.
So it is possible, there are certain home tests that can pick up central sleep apnea.
Absolutely, yeah.
But I think that it's more, I mean, I've mainly heard that people should be going for an in-lab study for that, or...
Yeah, I mean, if you are, these home PPG units, with the organization that I work with, Enzo Data, the algorithm that, the PPG algorithm that they detected with that, we are able to see the central sleep apnea, and it's based off just monitoring basically how your blood goes out to that fingertip can tell us a lot, like the rate and the volume and all of that stuff. But central sleep apnea should never just be treated with an AutoPAP. It's actually right. A very different way of treating. So what they would do if that physician sees that, you'll be brought back in the lab, most certainly, to be able to see exactly what's going on. There's a lot of disease states that are correlated with central sleep apnea too, down the road, like Parkinson's and different things like that. So Yeah, there are congestive heart failure. Sorry, not part Parkinson's is a whole other thing, but congestive heart failure and stuff. So there's a lot of other comorbid issues that the doctor has to keep tabs
on. So that kind of reminded me when I was talking about the titrating study I did in the lab. It actually showed periodic limb movement disorder, like that I never even knew I had, because they have like sensors on your legs and different things. So it is kind of amazing what it can pick up.
And I also want to like frame too for the audience. Yes, CPAP is going to be that gold standard that they first put on you, but there are other treatment options, and that is something to discuss with your physician. It's confusing, right? It's confusing. Yeah, I get it.
Really confusing.
So basically, the difference between CPAP and bilevel, you're always going to be put on CPAP first, unless there's like some ventilatory issues, and that's a whole other subject. But the CPAP delivers one steady pressure. So what that flow is doing is you're basically what's happening is that soft tissue is collapsing, and that force per air that's coming from that CPAP mask is just going to keep that airway splinted open. So instead of allowing it to collapse, and that could be anywhere from 5 to 20. A pressure, obviously, as you can imagine, the higher you get, the more it feels like it's blowing your face off. But bilevel is actually meant for more ventilatory reasons and for individuals that maybe get up really high on CPAP or perhaps they're not tolerating it as well. And bilevel, the inhalation is going to be that higher pressure. And then when you go to exhale, it's going to drop it by at least 4 pressure settings. So it makes it a little bit easier to breathe out against. And there's a bunch of health reasons too why your physician would want you to switch to bilevel. What we're seeing now in a lot of cases too is patients are getting set up on what we call an auto PAP. And what that is it just widens the range. So instead of that direct setting, it's going to auto sense when you need more pressure setting and raise it as you sleep. And then it'll lower back down when you don't. So we've seen a lot of success with patients with that, preventing them of like, I can't tolerate stuff like that. There's still stuff with the sleep coach can do to maybe lower those metrics instead of allowing the machine to go up to 15, 16. If they see with your downloads, okay, you're really sitting at the sweet spot of 7 or 8, then I'm going to lower that because why you don't need that higher pressure setting. So some of that is super useful too as a patient as you're getting set up. I'm so glad, Jody, that they taught you how to adjust your
7 or 8. I'm at 17.
Well, yeah. So with that, like some of it is, yeah. I'm glad that your sleep coach kind of talked you through some of it. We don't always go to every patient because we want to, it's kind of like an experiment or research. You want to see that patient on certain things to be able to dictate, right? Like some of it, and getting that professional help is super important, but it can make a world of difference lowering it. The ideal is to get your number under 5. So you mentioned like 80 something. We want it under 5, but sometimes let's just say, you know what, we lowered it and your AHI is staying at like 10, but you're using it every night and it's way better than the 85. And that's something that a sleep coach will take a look at and dictate, you know, what is success? What is the definition of success for that patient?
So I think that's super helpful. Thank you, Andrew, for just really quick. I was just going to say a lot of it, I think, just having talked to so many patients going through this, a lot of it depends on geographically where you are. Because so certainly what happened with me was I started with my primary care physician, got a referral to a sleep specialist, and then they were the ones that dealt with anything to do with my CPAP, right? So all my PCP would do would be get a report maybe from the sleep specialist, but they weren't anything to do with the pressure settings on my CPAP. But I've talked to a number of people who don't live close enough to, you know, a testing facility where their primary care physician really is the one who's doing the CPAP settings for them and all the stuff. So yeah, it really depends where you live. Like personally, I feel good about having a sleep specialist involved, and I wish we had more of those specialist doctors. So I did want to just briefly touch on some other sort of ways to get tested, which are not as typical, right? But I thought it was worth mentioning that there are some dentists who offer oral appliance therapy who are able to administer home testing. Now, the diagnosis and reading the data and coming up with the diagnosis is done still by a sleep physician, but it's just worth mentioning that that is a pathway that some people are using where they're seeing a dentist who's able to. Now, it's not every state. I believe Ohio, New York, and New Jersey, they're not able to do that. But in the other states, dentists have started doing that. So just to be aware of that. And also a CBCT scan. So that's not a diagnostic test. It's not a thing that's going to get you a diagnosis with sleep apnea. But that is, since we're talking testing, that is a test that often oral and maxillofacial surgeons might use, or dentists or orthodontists if you're having maybe a double jaw surgery or surgically assisted rapid palate expansion. And another one is the DICE procedure, so a drug-induced sleep endoscopy. Again, that's not going to be used as a diagnostic test, but some ENT surgeons will use that, especially if they're looking at people who are looking at the Inspire implant or another ENT surgery. They do use the drug-induced sleep endoscopy for that. So I just wanted to kind of touch on those just to be complete. So here, I've got a few. We're just going to wrap up. Was there anything else, Jody or Andrea, that you feel that you didn't?
Yeah, just on? Real quick, I do want to add, yeah, a lot of individuals have been hearing about the Apple Watch that was just, yeah, cleared to be able to detect OSA. And they are saying moderate to severe. And it is, again, not a diagnostic tool. It's just more of a screening. So if you're wearing it and it's telling you that, it's saying, hey, go see your physician. But that PPG technology that I was referring to earlier, that's the same. That's the same stuff. It's a different type of light wavelength with how it detects it. It goes into like different parts of the skin tone, basically, like with the blood volume. But that is something that it's the same technology of what that. So that's really cool. I'm hoping that it allows more patients to say, hey, even if they didn't go down the path of seeing their physician first, maybe that would make them.
I'm really glad you raised that. I meant to bring that up. But yeah, so wearables in general, we can say are not diagnostic, right? So if you have a watch or a ring, and it's like there's a lot of different, there's Aura rings and a lot of different things, but those are not going to diagnose sleep apnea, right?
Yeah, so there's different, and sure that there's medical grade. So the equipment that certain groups utilize, that our group utilizes, is medical grade. The oximeters that you have in the hospital are medical grade. The Apple Watch is not, you know, so ensure that you understand like what's cleared and stuff like that. But yeah, it's always a good idea to follow up with your physician with it.
That's super helpful. Thank you so much for raising that. Was there anything else, Jody, before we wrap up?
I just want to tell everybody, please get help. If you've got someone and you know something's wrong with them, please make them get help. Nag them. Be the squeaky wheel. Make them mad. Make them get some help just to shut you up, but make them get help. And as far as the Apple Watch and the rings and all that, they're not diagnostic, but they'll tell you something's wrong. Absolutely. My wife's Coke bottle wasn't diagnostic, but it told me something was wrong. So just please, it'll change. I'm 50 years old. I feel better than I did when I was 40. I've quit smoking. I've lost weight. I've seen the country. Good Lord, people, if I'm not the poster boy for get a damn mask, I don't know who he is.
You're a walking advertisement is what you are.
You know, well, it's one of those few things that I never thought would be important to me, but it's became one of the most important things to me in my life.
Yeah.
If I could figure out a way to start a fund so people that didn't have insurance and couldn't afford testing or couldn't afford the equipment, where we could raise money yearly and help people out, I'd do it in a heartbeat. I'm just not smart enough.
You're plenty smart, Jody. So thank you.
I still keep my money in my sock drawer. So don't send me your money, please, people. Don't send me your money.
So there's a couple of things I just wanted to share before we wrap up. So the AASM, which is the American Academy of Sleep Medicine, has this website where you can search for accredited sleep testing facilities. So that's just a really good place to go to kind of check for stuff in your area. They've also got this patient's guide to understanding diagnostic testing for OSA, which I thought was helpful. So when we make our toolkit that we've been talking about, the links to those will be in it. And then I also wanted to highlight some of the other patient organizations here in the United States. So there's the Alliance of Sleep Apnea Partners, who are doing some great advocacy work for people with sleep apnea, and then also the American Sleep Apnea Association. So just like Jody was mentioning, some people are in a position where they can't afford their CPAP therapy, and the American Sleep Apnea Association have a program where people can get the equipment that they need, even if they don't have the means. And similarly with the Reggie White Foundation, they do a similar program. And so I just wanted to highlight their work. And then if you're tuning in and you're in a different country, then there are a lot of different international organizations that you can connect with. And again, we're going to include all of those in our toolkit. I wanted to just say that a lot of what we've been talking about is navigating to sleep testing options. And so here at Project Sleep, we have a really good resource for that called the Sleep Helpline. So you can either call or fill out a web form or email, and our staff member will help. It's not medical advice or medical, you know, coaching or anything, but it's navigational support to help you find the resources you need in your area. So if you're looking to get tested, they'll be able to find some opportunities for you in your state and local to you. So I really recommend you reach out if you need any help navigating all of this. And it's worth saying we're a 501c3 nonprofit, and we're so grateful for the support of our individual donors and also to our corporate sponsors, Lilly and ApneaMed, for making our program Sleep Apnea Squad possible. And just finally, thank you all so much for joining us. And if you want to be kept in the loop about when the toolkit becomes available or just more about our future sessions, you can sign up for e-updates and we'll get the information to you by email. And also, if you're going to share on social media about your life with sleep apnea, we'd love to follow along. If you want to use the hashtag Sleep Apnea Squad, we'd love that. So thank you all so much for tuning in.
The Project Sleep Podcast is produced by Carver Sound Productions. For more information on podcast production services, visit carversoundproductions.com.